On Newsnight tonight, contractors brace for a showdown with government as they reject government's offer to restructure $2.8 billion debt.
The private banks and contractors, the state of our negotiation with them. We've actually issued we sent an offer.
How? We are not going to accept it. Because when we do, it means we will be in debt perpetuity. Because where are you going to get money to pay?
We'll explore what this will mean for the survival of private banks in Ghana as government targets them in this next phase of debt restructuring. Also tonight, civil society mobilizing to take on illegal mining in the next phase of a citizen-led war against Galamsey.
Much of the action lies with the civil society media to bring pressure. But what is needed is a question of the timing. There must be demobilizing equipment being used to destroy our body water.
But we'll organize a labor join. We'll hear from the labor unions. MPs set to fight revised road traffic regulation amendment as they plot to annul it after they were left out of the list of public officials given the right to fix sirens on their cars.
If we all agree that that is not the right thing to do, they will come with a report for us to do what? To annul it. And we should be able to get the 2/3. Why should Parliament go to sleep?
But I think when we get the 2/3 majority, we can be able to annul.
But why this sudden shift in stance when some MPs earlier kicked against the ally and subsequently demanded his withdrawal?
We recognize the public's perception of insensitivity, and I'm here to offer an apology and assure the Ghanaian people that this parliament remains acutely aware of and responsive to their needs.
We'll explore the contradictions. Plus, the Electoral Commission turns down NDC's request for a live broadcast of a crucial meeting with the commission barely 24 hours before the engagement. We'll hear from the NDC, which is refusing to back down.
A live broadcast of it. And we'll say, fine, we have no problem. We will appear before them as stated tomorrow, 2 p.m. But we will find innovative means of making sure that the media capture exactly what we are going to present to them.
You're live here on Newsnight. It's on Joy 99.7 FM. I'll take your views also 055-111-1997. And later in our disabled series, we'll tell you the story of a 20-year-old boy who lost his sight after sitting for the BECE, but that is not stopping him from chasing his academic dreams.
I was not born with it, and across the line it happens. I want to be a teacher so that I should be able to educate people how to manage people with disabilities.
That's later here on Newsnight. Now, contractors across the country are tonight bracing for a showdown with government as they categorically reject government's attempt to restructure $2.8 billion debt. Even before government presents the terms of the next phase of its debt restructuring program, the Association of Road Contractors say there is no way they will agree to the restructuring that will see them forego some huge arrears. The recent round of debt restructuring will also affect private banks. Listen to the Finance Minister, Dr. Mohammed Amin Adam, announced that an offer has already been made to the private banks and to contractors.
The private banks and contractors, the state of our negotiation with them, we've actually issued, we sent an offer, we asked our advisor to send an offer to them after we have physically engaged with them. I visited China, we've also engaged some of them in Ghana, and we think we are ready to share an offer, to present an offer to them for their consideration. And so we've instructed our advisors to share our offer with the creditors, the commercial creditors, and hopefully they will accept the terms that we are offering to them. I think it's about $2.8 billion that is outstanding.
Joining me right now is the National Chairman of the Ghana Road Contractors Association, John Affle. Thank you very much, Mr. Affle, for your time here on Newsnight. Has an offer been shared with you?
Oh, thank you very much, Evans, for reaching me. We haven't been reached as such. And I think what I have read is pertaining to the foreign contractors. We local contractors haven't been approached, and I don't think we will be involved. Because the amount we owe is far much, much less than the $2.8 billion. What is outstanding is just even less than the $1 billion. So I don't think we, the local contractors, are involved in this transactions.
In the first round, though, of domestic restructuring, were you contacted at all?
Not at all.
I know this issue of arrears has been a major one. Has an attempt been made to clear those arrears?
Sorry?
In terms of the arrears that government owes you, has an attempt been made to clear the arrears?
No, not yet.
How much are you owed?
For now, at the road sector, that is where I can talk much. And it's about 9.9 billion Ghana cedis and about 2.2 billion Ghana cedis too from Cocoa Board.
So you're talking in excess of some 11 billion cedis?
Yes.
And how long have this debt been on the books?
Oh, it was much higher than that, but the Air Force too. The government has been paying in bits, but as at the end of last month, that was the outstandings left. And I know there's something in the pipeline they are looking at to reduce the outstandings for us.
Am I getting a sense that you've received assurances that you will receive payment for the 11 plus billion that you're owed?
Yes, it's not full assurance, but we know that they are discussing. And we've been given some sort of assurance that even in this month of September, something huge will be paid at the road fund.
And we've reached the finance ministry to get some clarity on which category of contractors were they referring to. But do I hear you say that if you are included in that list, you will not participate?
Hopefully we can't participate, because our debt has been there for a very long time, from 2016 to now. So I don't think it would be right for anybody to do anything like that. It would be very much unfair to us.
Thank you very much. That's the National Chairman of the Ghana Road Contractors Association, John Afol. As you may have heard the Finance Minister say there, private banks will also be required to examine the offer and possibly also take that up. We've just been hearing from the Executive Director of the Imani, that's the President of Imani Africa, Franklin Kodjo, who's raising concerns with that. He joins us on the line right now. Mr. Kodjo, thanks for your time here on Newsnight. You've been raising concerns about the potential further destabilizing effect of this restructuring for private banks. Why is there such an alarm around this? I mean, government says this is needed, as you know, to stabilize the economy.
Well, first of all, good evening, Evans. I need to make a correction, though. I mean, the way the original story was written, it appears as though we're dealing with local banks. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Well, it turns out my discussion with the finance minister a couple of minutes ago actually clarified that it has to do with external banks, and that the external banks and contractors, the commercial loans come to about $2.8 billion, which essentially is the last stage of our debt restructuring. He tells me that they already done the credit test and Eurobond holders. And in fact, today, I've seen a letter where the bondholders have issued a statement declaring support for the restructuring plan. It looks to me that upon settlement, after the successful exchange, our debt stocks seem to be reducing by about $4.7 billion. And then I think we are going to have an additional debt service relief of about $4.4 billion. So, yes, ordinarily it looks as if though we are on the trajectory to reducing our debt sustainability, reaching our debt sustainability target at the IMF. But there's still a long way to go. The issue really is that whether it's external or local, the fact of the matter is that we are still dealing with debt. And I'm happy that the finance minister seems to be doing everything to ensure that the restructuring talks are successful. What I worry about is the behavior that led to the situation we are currently in. Whether we are curtailing that behavior, it appears to me we are actually not doing so, even though there's no money to splurge around. But the little that is left is also not being, particularly this last effort to with smoothing all rules across all the country, which appears to me to be a very big system. What is it called? Drip? They call it drip, right? Where is this tree supposed to be receiving certain accoutrement? We don't know the cost. We don't know where the money is coming from. We don't know exactly how these procurement issues around it were done. And that worries me greatly. But anyway, I want to believe the finance minister has a chance on the dial, and so he may not die wrongly.
And listening to him, though, he says he went to China, he had some engagements, but also engaged some of them locally. But having spoken to him, he's given you clarity, because your concern was, and I saw your post, this impact it may have on local banks, but it's not local banks.
No, not at all. Not at all. It's not local banks at all.
Is it possible? Now, you know, you have some, you know, multinational banks with offices and branches in country that they may be part of this list.
Not at all. I mean, these are essentially, if you look at the, I don't think so. I don't think there is any connection at all to the bank. So there wouldn't be any challenges to stay on that front.
And this, as you made an essential point about our debt situation, which is part of this whole process, was restructuring. And each time you hear that debt restructuring is ending, but we have the next phase, which is this next phase. Admittedly, the amount involved is quite small compared to the full amount that we've been restructuring over the last, more than a year now. Based on what you know, the... Is there confidence that these private banks and contractors will play ball?
Oh, they would, because from the letter I'm reading, the letter of assurance on the bondholders, I mean, the representatives have all signed up. They've agreed that that's the process, and they're happy with it. As I said, at the end of the day, it is what it is. I mean, we should never, ever get to this stage again. And even though this has been successfully done, it has somehow dented our image internationally. Something I think Amin seems to be doing well, trying to claw back. As I said, while he's doing that with one hand, it looks as if the other hand is pressing him down. Probably if he's acquiesced with this drip thing. I worry greatly about this drip thing having a substantial impact on our finances next year.
Franklin Kujo, thank you very much. He's the president of Imani Africa there on the debt restructuring with private banks and with contractors. And tonight there are frantic moves underway among MPs, members of parliament on both sides of the aisle, to marshal 2/3 of members who annul the newly laid road traffic regulation amendment. And this revised regulation does not allow MPs, the speaker, ministers and the chief justice to fix sirens on their cars or use them. This follows an earlier version that granted them the right but was withdrawn after intense public backlash. Well, yesterday, the revised legislative instrument was laid, and already some MPs and the Speaker are demanding that they are afforded that privilege. Listen to the Speaker of Parliament on the floor of the House yesterday, rallying MPs who possibly annul the LI in its current state.
The committee should go and go through it, because there may be other matters, apart from just this one, that needs reconsideration. So let's allow the committee to go and look at it. And if we all agree that that is not the right thing to do, they will come with a report for us to do what? To annul it. And we should be able to get the 2/3. Why should Parliament go to sleep and the instrument will slip through? That is not right. But the other part is that if you go through the instrument, members, the public, and other persons are not denied the facility of a motorcade. It's available to be used. If it becomes necessary, you ask for it.
Well, former minority leader Harun Idrisu wants the Speaker and the Chief Justice to be at least allowed to use sirens, while Majority Leader Alexander Fenyomarkin wants MPs to be included.
The Speaker, the Lady Chief Justice, the Chief Justice of Ghana cannot be left out of this privilege or entitlement of having a police accompany them. What we need to guard against, which is what the public is saying, that the ministers, you are not doing the roads properly, there is congestion on the roads, and you want a free road to ride.
It's my humble prayer that we have a second look at this regulation to include MPs and key appointees whose work will require the use of certain privileges.
Well, beyond the concerns raised on the floor by the MPs, we are now learning that there are real moves tonight to have the ally as laid annulled, because as it is right now, it excludes the MPs from using the sirens on their vehicle. Listen to the deputy whips on both the minority and majority sides speak to me on PM Express last night.
I am of the opinion, strong opinion, that members of parliament should be allowed to use a siren, okay, with all due respect to the public, because the point is that out of 30 million Ghanaians, we are only 275 members of parliament privileged, and we have been elected, meaning we are representing the 30 people. And if you look at the constitution of Ghana, how it has been framed, when we go to 2024 election, it's two people that have been elected, members of parliament and the president. Now, if you come and look at the constitution in article 117, 116, 118, for there are immunity to members of parliament, then where we are immune to being arrested, being safe, being summoned, and all those things. Now, there will be a serious problem. Assuming I am driving to parliament and I have my siren on, and the police stopped me on the road and said that, oh, the regulations say that you cannot
use
the siren. But the constitution also says that when I'm going to parliament, you can't arrest me. Which one?
So for clarity, what has been relayed today, does it still give you the right to use it, or it's been taken out?
No, it has been taken out. Okay. So what has been laid
so who
today
enjoys that right?
If only the president. Even the speaker of parliament is not supposed to enjoy that.
So parliament cannot use.
Cannot.
What about the
chief justice? No.
Clearly, it is going to be a problematic law. But the speaker has been given motorcade already.
Yeah, you can use a motorcade, but don't use a siren. I guess that's
the... But coming to the MPs, you know, that's how democracy operates. The people, you bring a law, they'll say we disagree. You have to take it. Then you consult, listen to them, and address concerns. Then you come back.
Which is what you've done.
And it has happened several times.
So in 21 days, this becomes law?
Yeah, in 21 days. But today is just the first day. Okay. As to whether it will get the 21 days, because we'll come somewhere in October. Mm. And we have 92 days to elections. We are already in the whole of September, we are not coming. Then we'll come somewhere in October, maybe for 3 weeks. And as to whether for the 3 weeks plus what, today, one day, you'll get the 21 days.
I okay. Listen, enjoy
but
the rest of
But I think when
your,
we get
the rest
to
of your
test majority, we can be able to analyze.
So that there is the sense from both sides there. And the last voice that you heard is the majority, the deputy majority whip there, who talks about the two-thirds that they require to annul it. My colleague, parliamentary affairs correspondent, joins us on the line right now. Quickly, when the initial ally was laid and opposed by the public, the minority side put out a statement asking government to withdraw it, didn't they?
Well, yes. In fact, the minority leader himself, Dr. Kassiel Atoforsen, did sign a statement and put it out that, given the sensitive nature of the decision that the roads ministry and the transport ministry was taking, and given the public backlash, they were of the view that that must be withdrawn, that ally. And in fact, they went on to say that there have not been consultation, that a lot of people were blindsided by that decision. So the minority as a caucus, they take the stance of the people at the time that said, you do not need to give MPs this privilege because the public have spoken against it. And that is exactly the position the minority held at the time. When it comes to the Speaker, Evans, the Speaker of Parliament did first deny knowledge of that. In fact, we fact-checked that here, and it was revealed that that could not have been true, because on the day that ally, which granted MPs and other public office holders that specific right, it was Alban Bagben that was in the chair. Later on, that ally was withdrawn, and the Speaker of Parliament subsequently issued a formal apology, in fact saying that that ally was clearly insensitive to the public, and it's for this reason that Parliament has learned the lessons, and it will not happen going forward. Listen to the Speaker at the time.
Including ministers of state, members of Parliament, and justices of the Superior Courts of Judicature, the privilege of using sirens on our roads and exemption from speed limits. Honourable members from Western Region, this provision has been perceived by many as a means for the political class to evade the very traffic challenges that affect the general public, leading to widespread public outcry and intense debate on social media platforms. In light of these developments, and following the opposition's firm stance against the legislative instrument, the government has decided to withdraw the proposed amendments. Today, I wish to address the very key issues arising from this situation, provide clarity on the legislative process, and engage in a constructive dialogue about the future of subsidiary legislation in our beloved country. We recognize the public's perception of insensitivity, and I'm here to offer an apology and assure the Ghanaian people that this Parliament remains acutely aware of and responsive to their needs.
I want to bring in Ahmed Ibrahim, is the first deputy minority whip, joins us on the line right now. Ahmed, last night when we spoke, you argued for this ally to include MPs on the list of public officials who can fix sirens on your vehicles. But when this matter first came up and there was a public backlash, your side, led by the minority leader, issued a strongly worded statement in which he asked the government to withdraw the ally because you're not in favour of it as a minority group. So how do you reconcile that position and what you expressed to me last night?
Ivan, let me say a very good evening to our cherished listeners. My argument yesterday was in support of the Speaker of Parliament and the Chief Justice. And the argument I made in connection of the MPs is that you make a law, the people that you are making the law, you are ruling. If they disagree with you in terms of the law, the nicest or the wisest thing for you to do is to withdraw the law, concise, sensitize the people, engage with them. If they agree, fine. If they disagree, then you do away with it. And it has happened not once, not twice, more than that. It happened when the VAT, value added tax, was introduced in 1994. Ghanaians disagreed. It was withdrawn, revised, represented, and accepted. The same thing happens when the e-levy was brought. Ghanaians disagreed. We couldn't pass it. It was passed somehow. Later, it was repealed, amended, and relayed and approved. So that is the essence of democracy. When you are bringing something and the people say no, you don't have to force your way through. So when the people disagreed with Parliament, it was on that basis that we say, yes, Ghanaians, the people are always right. Your employer will always be right. So let's withdraw it. It was withdrawn. But what was laid yesterday was so defective to the extent that the Speaker of Parliament himself is not given the opportunity to have a siren on his car. The Chief Justice of the Republic is also not given the chance to have siren on his car. And these were the two most critical issues that yesterday I shared my views on. By looking at the collective wisdom of the House, Evans, it is only a fool who will not change his mind. If you look at the listening to the collective wisdom and the various contributions made by both the Honorable Haruna Idrisu and the Honorable Major Ken Ajapong, even though everybody had a step ahead of the other, Haruna Idrisu argued that it would be wrong to personalize legislation, and that we should not conceive the law as if we are legislating against Speaker Babin. But the office of the Speaker of Parliament is what the law is being made for. The office of the Chief Justice is what the law is being made for. So to say it is only the President of the Republic of Ghana who is entitled to use siren is unheard of. However, that law is being promulgated by parliamentarians in Parliament. And it was on that note that Honorable Kennedy Ajapong also rose on his feet and said, in fact, we must be bold. We must not continuously be legislating to the disadvantage of our good self simply because we are politicians.
And you support that position.
That's where we are. And this is what happened yesterday.
And so you support that position to include the MPs on the list?
To include the MPs, so long as it is not popular with Ghanaians, I cannot support it now.
But you said that it's only a fool who doesn't change his mind. And in your case, you're making that point to reinforce.
I'm saying it in connection with how we have changed our minds on the e-levy, how we change our minds on the value-added tax, how we change our mind in the previous law that we passed. That's where I brought the proverb.
And in this case, as we speak tonight...
In this particular case, the mood of the country is not in support of it. And if you say, you know, if you say you are bringing it now, even it will be a problem. Even left to me alone, what was laid yesterday wouldn't have even been laid at all.
So just for clarity, because yesterday you made the point about how MPs, in essence, also will need this because of the work.
Oh, clearly it happens. And there are certain instances that we send dispatch riders and motor kids to go and bring MPs for votes. I remember as a deputy whip, in most instances, there were days that, especially the central and western region MPs, and most of the MPs who stay in Kaswa, when there's traffic and there's an emergency vote in parliament, we have to send dispatch riders to go and bring them. So it is a practical challenge that we've been facing.
That is why you need the sirens on your vehicle.
Even as I speak to you, day before, that the very first day, that the very day that we were laying this law, we had to send a dispatch rider to airport to go and bring an MP to come and vote. Even though by the time the MP got here, the vote didn't even come on. So there are practical challenges, but as and when we get there, even whether it is a necessity or not, you cannot proceed just to lay it. You need to engage Ghanaians, consult them, and get their buy-in before you proceed. Because we are not there to represent ourselves.
The verdict on this is very loud and clear, and we play the speaker. There's a reason why the speaker apologized formally to us all, because he recognized that the public was opposed to it.
Exactly.
But as we speak tonight, from the conversation I had with the two leaders, in fact, your other colleague was very clear that there is a consensus around getting two-thirds to annul it and stop it from actually maturing.
No. There is, you can't call it consensus. You can call it sentiments. Because we have not collectively had a meeting on that. A consensus is built. But the individual sentiments, until you segregate them, until you congregate and take a decision, you can't say you have built a consensus.
And where do you stand on that spectrum of sentiment? Are you towards those who say let's mobilize?
Evans, I will be a hypocrite to say that I'm against it, because I was one of I'm a beneficiary to the SRM. The majority leader has a dispatch rider. The minority leader has a dispatch rider. The Speaker of Parliament has a dispatch rider. The clerk to Parliament has a dispatch rider. I'm telling you this. Even there are practical challenges that we need to solve. And clearly, you know, the way we are eroding the capacities of the Speaker of Parliament, it will come to a point that the Speaker will be so weak that Parliament itself will be weakened. You remember not so long, the military guards to the Speaker were all withdrawn. Even, are you aware of that?
You tell me.
As I speak to you, the military, the soldiers guarding the speaker are all being withdrawn. Meanwhile, the Electoral Commission, J. Mensah, has about 31 soldiers who are guiding her. Between J. Mensah and Speaker Alban Bagbin, if you compare the two, who is ahead of who in terms of national ranking?
I mean, with that
but
said,
the
though,
J. Mensah one, nobody sees anything wrong with that.
Yes,
but the Ababagun one, people see everything wrong with
Ahmed, that. With that said, when your leader, the minority leader, said, quote, "We have instructed all our members on the committee to strongly oppose it at the committee level," when he said that,
yeah,
he was wrong, was he not?
You know, the majority will lead all of us. And when he gives a directive, I cannot go against
it. But now you're disagreeing with him.
No, even you may disagree, but you cannot go against it.
Yes, but now you just said that you'd be a hypocrite if you don't say you also want it. But you disagree with that position now.
No, I'm not saying if I don't want it. I'm a beneficiary.
And you want that to be...
We were all using the sirens before the legislature. That's what I mean.
So you no longer oppose this?
As was instructed by your leader. It has now been outlawed.
But here's the thing, though. I mean, you are not an ordinary member on the minority. You are part of the leadership. And so when your leaders came together and issued that statement.
Evans.
What has changed? I mean, this is a month. It's just been a month. What has changed?
No, not what has... Evans. Legislate today and legislate and do amendment. And that is the essence of parliament. Isn't it?
Finally, let me ask you. This sentiment to annul it, stop it before...
Exactly. That's how I want you to call it. I don't want you to call it a consensus.
Yes,
because the House has not reached any consensus.
This
there are individual members who are venting their sentiments.
Yes. So I'm using that. This sentiment to arrest it and annul it before the 21st day, before it becomes law, will they actually materialize knowing the sentiment? Will MPs actually do it?
Evans. Hello?
Yes, Ahmed.
Yeah, I can hear you now.
I'm just asking whether that would actually happen, knowing what you know in the House.
Evans, the House has adjourned. Members have gone to their constituencies. So it is only when we come, and it will take 21 days before it will come to law. But before the 21 days, the Constitution is clear. Article 77.11. The Article 11.7, is clear. Unless you get 183 MPs to vote against it. But even why are we going to get 183 MPs to congregate in Parliament from this time up to December 7th?
Ahmed Ibrahim, thank you very much. He's the first Deputy Minority Whip in the House. And I know many of you were very, very passionate about this subject, for which reason the Speaker apologized, and you heard his apology there, but he said the sentiment now appears to have changed. Yesterday the LI was laid and the MPs were excluded from the list of public officials who enjoy the use of sirens on their vehicles, and as you've heard explained, they now believe that shouldn't have been the case, and there is strong sentiments that they should mobilize to truncate this process from fully maturing, turning that LI into fully fledged legislation. I want to hear from you. 055-111-1997. George Yaffe is here with business.
Well, Evans, coming up, government finally launches the Eurobond debt exchange program as it seeks to restructure some $13 billion. And consumer spending, manufacturing activities pick up strongly for the first 5 months of this year, backing claims of the economy showing signs of recovery. The business news on Newsnight is brought to you by MTN Business. Welcome to the new world of business. Synthes Thanks and President Herbal Enchako,
who had a spunky new office, to congratulate him on opening his business. And man, was I impressed. The business is just moving quick. The sales, customers, everything is just working seamlessly. The secret? He said,
it's MTN Business Broadband. In this fast-paced environment, we need fast and reliable internet to support all business types. No laggy online meetings, great download and upload speeds, impeccable business management systems, all inclusive. I mean, you can have it all.
Shout! I signed on immediately.
To enable your business stay ahead and stay connected, make sure you're signed on to the best internet made just for businesses. MTN Business Broadband. Sign up today on broadband.mtn.com.gh. And manage your account on my MTN app. Call 0244-308-111 for more information. We are good together everywhere you go.
Hooray! Kingdom Books and Stationery Limited's back to school promotion is here with us once again. From August to September this year, Kingdom Books and Stationery Limited is giving a generous 10 to 20% discount on all school items like textbooks, pens, pencils, erasers, exercise books, and much more across all our branches in Accra, Tema, Kumasi, Takrady, Winneba, and Cape Coast. Parents, teachers, and students, please hurry while stocks last. For more information, call us on 0506-487-557 or 0302-764-209 or via email at info@kingdomgh.com. You can also visit our website www.kingdomstoreonline.com. Kingdom Books, where quality and affordability are both assured. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah. We have a new leader in town, Obiaren
ntie amanfo meda mo se bebre wonim se mabei mebe mamu more charcoal for whiter teeth
more charcoal
not only that mebe mamu lemon
more lemon
zinc for fresher breath
more zinc
and fluoride for stronger teeth
introducing the new President Charcoal packed with more power with a combination of charcoal and lemon for naturally whiter teeth. Grab yours now. This advert is FDA approved.
The luckiest
*712#
luck is everywhere for everyone.
Coma and Nanfufua, a dialing *712# and found no regrets. A side coma investors are a striking goal. A coma health workers are a diagnosing lack with precision. A side coma that tough guy who couldn't hold back his tears. They say a coma passionate farmer or not so entering containing a joy. Affairing to the seamstresser or turning a hard end stitches into a bundle of happiness. And now, a coma, if you say your next big win is right here.
Dial *712# and join the luckiest winning celebration. From the 1st of July 2024, dial *712# to keep buying tickets as a group, individual, or even as a community. Win loads of cash and prizes in the community draw or go for the grand draw on the 30th of November 2024. Unlock your luck with *712#. Join the winning streak now.
The luckiest
*712#
luck is everywhere for everyone, yeah. The luckiest.
You're welcome back to Business on Newsnight. Now, government has finally launched the much talked about Eurobond debt exchange program. The finance ministry is seeking to restructure some $13 billion. The offer was communicated to investors around the world through the London Stock Exchange. Development should mean that the offer has been made to these investors for them to accept the proposed terms or reject what government has put on the table for them. To other stories now, consumer spending, manufacturing and construction activities have picked up strongly for the first 5 months of this year. There is more from the Bank of Ghana Monetary Report ending July this year in the following Business Desk report.
Consumer spending, as measured by domestic VAT and retail sales, posted positive performance in May 2024. Compared to the same period for last year. Bank of Ghana data show that when you look at what we mobilized last year compared to May this year, it has gone up by more than 28% to 1.36 billion Ghana cedis. Now, when you track the numbers from January to May this year, tax handle got government some 6.22 billion Ghana cedis. Retail sales, on the other hand, went up by more than 25% to 200 million Ghana cedis, ending May this year. Activities in the manufacturing subsector that gauges the trends in the collection of direct taxes and private sector workers' contributions to SNIT showed that there has been some improvement ending May this year. The Bank of Ghana data put the amount mobilized for the first 5 months of this year at 22.19 billion Ghana cedis, representing more than 31% jump. The same can be said for the construction sector, that has also picked up strongly based on cement sales, which has gone up by 212,000 metric tons. For some, the data may give some credence to claims that the economy is showing signs of recovery and how that could impact on revenue collections going forward, a critical ingredient when it comes to stabilizing the economy.
And that is the Business Desk report. In another story, economist Dr. Patrick Osumien is pushing for fresh expenditure cuts to help control the country's rising debt. It's coming after government linked the continued spike in the total debt stocks to the city's depreciation after hitting 761 billion Ghana cedis ending July this year. But Dr. Osumien maintains that government needs to move to demonstrate its commitment to bring down the debt to sustainable levels.
The debt comes from the difference between your expenditure and your revenue. So either you rein in expenditure and or you collect more revenue. There are still a big chunk of uncollected revenues, and I think that's what you should focus on. So I think there are still a lot to be done. Since we said that we've ballooned the number of taxpayers because we are using the Ghana card, we haven't really seen any benefit.
Economist Dr. Patrick Osumien. Now, the World Bank has been giving details now on how the $250 million energy sector loan will be disbursed to Ghana. Now, Parliament yesterday finally approved the facility after several delays due to concerns about the terms under the facility. World Bank Country Director Robert O'Brien says that the drawdowns will be carried out just like other project funding for the country.
So one is the development policy support, and that's the modality where we agree with the government on a number of policy and institutional reforms, and once the government accomplishes those, we disperse. So that's a rapidly dispersing. The second one, broadly speaking, is a project where it's traditional implementation through procurement. So contracts are signed, contracts are procured competitively, they're signed, and then the money flows in accordance with the particular contract. And then the third modality is what we call a program for results, where there's specific results agreed in a sector like education or health, and when those results are obtained, there's an agreement on the amount to disperse to support the government's program. The energy program for results or energy project, where we're going to be supporting things like the procurement of prepaid meters to continue the rollout of prepaid meters, improve the distribution systems in Ghana, but also undertake audits of the cash waterfall mechanism to ensure that there's good transparency around the financial flows within.
World Bank Country Director Robert O'Brien. Now, MasterCard Foundation and MES has actually begun a series of engagement to support digital inclusion in Ghana's educational sector. The move aims at gathering ideas for educational technology strategy in the country. Shiraj Sarja is the head of strategic partnership at the MasterCard Foundation and has been explaining why they are going this way to support the economy.
Came out was there needs to be some sort of policy or strategy run by the government. So now you see us here today, a year on, a lot of discussions from that call of action has been had. You see the Ministry of Education here, they're talking about the ICT and education policy and how EdTech roadmap would fall into it. They're going to soon be asking who is willing to come and sit down together to bring us the data. Give us, based on your experience, what is working out there, peri-urban, urban, rural schools, so that all of it is combined. One of the things we hope to see is that government also saying that this is not a government do it alone. They will need to work with the entire tech community. So that's why we kind of started this particular second forum.
Shiraj Shah is head of strategic